Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
888-808-1019 is the number to call, and I don't know why I gave that, because we have Todd Zeal in studio, so you could call us later on. You know, I gave it out of habit. We're joined by Todd Zeal in studio, and we have, obviously of SNY, former Met, and tomorrow, Todd, I know you've done a lot of work with this over the years, the 9/11, the anniversary, of course, of 9/11. You're going to be at Firehouse Engine. This is what Jay Horowitz wrote.
I can tell you. I don't know. Okay. I'm going to be at Ladder 12, Engine 3, which is in Chelsea on 19th and 7th. And,
nice.
This is something I've done year after year after year, and a guy that's become a really close friend of mine, who's Battalion Chief Tom McCarthy, retired last year after 43 years, but he was on duty during 9/11, lost five of his men. We always go and pay tribute to the guys fallen, and I'm going to be joined tomorrow by Jay Horowitz and Al Leiter and Johnny Franco and Bobby Valentine coming, and as the Mets, Jay has done an amazing job of making sure that we always stay committed to this cause and never forget. And, I think from that perspective as well, Jay was reminding me that, and I did some sit down for this as well. The Mets on their YouTube channel are premiering something called 11 Days in September. It's a documentary that really focuses more on the immediate aftermath of 9/11 and how the Mets and Shea Stadium played a big role in that relief effort. It became, a makeshift morgue. It became a supply center, and all of our team became, instant volunteers, not knowing what to do to help, but found some ways, to be able to contribute. So they're premiering that this week, and I think as I had told you, I'm working on a documentary as well with the Major League Baseball Network for the 25th anniversary. So we're getting started on some of that tomorrow with this morning commemoration that we've done every year.
It's awesome. I remember Tiki telling me that the Giants were going to Shea Stadium's parking lot, helping with food and whatever they could do. I mean, listen, it's a while ago now. The rawness begins to dissipate. But the other things don't. In the interactions you've had with victims' families, do they find any area or way to enjoy their lives? I know that's a strange question, but
yeah, and it is a strange question. And I think if I sort of rewind back to that moment, right? We come back from Pittsburgh on the night or early morning of September 12th by bus because obviously couldn't fly, and something I'll never forget is coming across the George Washington Bridge with a team full of guys trying to figure out what the world's going to be like. And we were getting escorted over the GW Bridge, and we could look down and see smoke in the air and lights streaming, and just realize in that moment the world has changed. You could hear nothing but a pin drop and guys crying on the bus ride. And so from that moment, we didn't know what to do, and fortunately, Bobby Valentine and Jay Horowitz and Sue Lucci from the Mets really kind of said, hey, we're going to be active and go down and start, seeing what we can do to help. And I thought it was going to be invasive, and we went down there, right away, 4 or 5 days after the attacks, and met with firefighters. And we were walking into these guys in the most horrific moments of their life, still digging for their brethren and thinking, why are we here? And then you could see them look up and see Mike Piazza's face or Johnny Franco or Bobby or me or Robin, the kind of the guys that were there, and just felt like they could remove themselves for just a minute and talk baseball and have something that felt common. That's how I traded a hat. That's how we got started wearing the hats in commemoration.
You were the first one that did that?
Yeah, I traded a hat for an NYPD hat, and then the other guys wanted to have, that sort of solidarity from our team. We were told by the commissioner's office that we couldn't wear them because they were, they restricted the uniform violation. And all of this will be told at, you know, in better detail with some other insight in the documentary that we do. But the reality is we realized at that time that even though we felt like we were invading into their personal space, they welcomed us in. And so we thought, okay, well, maybe sports has a way to help heal. And so I think that's what motivated us. And that's, to your point, that 9/21 game and the invited guests that we had, which were fallen families and children that had lost their parents. And, you know, there's story after story about, you know, families that didn't know how to react. Get a base hit. Was it going to be quiet? Are you allowed to celebrate? And the Piazza home run kind of lifted this this air and allowed people to say, you know, let's go Mets, USA, and have a smile. And we've got some great testimonials that feel like baseball in some way and sports in a more holistic way helped them get through that time. And that's really what the story is about, how, you know, baseball helped unite America, or at least New York City, at a time that you didn't know what to do.
From a fan's perspective, I remember being excited that baseball was back, going to that game and going into the same Shea Stadium parking lot where we used to park, and the feel was totally different.
And
there were barriers everywhere and missing signs, and it was just, it gives me goosebumps thinking about it. But that's a fan's perspective as I'm going into it, like, holy crap, this is bizarre. And then kind of, you know, the anthem and all that stuff. From a fan's perspective, you had to play baseball in that game. What was that like, going to the park and then showing up once you got there?
That's a great question. And it was an interesting one, too, because I would say maybe not 50-50, but I think the team was split as to whether or not we wanted to play or not. Okay, is it time? I was a proponent that, hey, Giuliani and Bush and the people that are trying to piece this city back together are like, hey, we're not going to let them keep us down. Time to show that this city is resilient and sports is the best way to do it. That's a great way to unite. So I was all for that. But some of the guys were still, you know, had a little trepidation about going into that. Was it safe? Was it going to, were five people going to show up, or 5,000 or 50,000? We had no real barometer. So going in there that night, seeing the amount of security and, you know, the way that shaped up, 20 years later, I finally watched the game. I didn't, and I remember in my mind that what I remembered about that game was not the game itself. I had no idea if I got a hit. I had no idea if I made a good play. I knew Mike's home run, and I very, very little aside from that. But what I did remember was the national anthem, all the guys lined up on the field when the bagpipes came into the stadium, Liza Minnelli on the seventh inning stretch, singing New York, New York, and watching the whole place like erupt with emotion. Those are the things that I remembered, and I had to watch the game to kind of realize what happened to the game, to your point.
That's absolutely, I mean, it's, you almost feel, I almost don't want to transition, you know, because there's other things to talk about, but it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy to think where we were, where we are now. When you said not all the guys wanted to play, did you guys take a literal vote? Like, was it actually man for man meetings, and counted up?
We did have meetings about it. I don't know that if we'd have said, hey, we're not ready, if that would have been, I think it would have been weighted towards the overall decision, but I don't think we were necessarily the absolute decision makers. And I think there was enough, you know, sort of momentum around baseball and the commissioner's office and Giuliani, you know, say what you want about Rudy, but he was the leader in that moment of this city and kind of the heartbeat. And he was adamant that we've got to show that we can stand back on our feet and this is the best way to do it. So I believed in that. And I, you know, and by the way, the thing that's so bizarre about it, I think this goes to the point, is like, it's tough to transition. Well, the reason we still talk about it now is because, you know, a lot of the firefighters I go to visit, they were either 2 years old or not even born. And they want to know. And to them, a lot of what happened there and the way the city rallied around the first responders is maybe the reason they signed up to be firefighters in the first place.
No question.
Or they had, you know, a parent that went down one of the towers and things like that. So it's the idea of never forgetting, which I think is what has really kind of kept this alive for us. And, you know, you look back on that moment now, and, you know, World Series and, you know, great personal moments aside, there's nothing even close in my career that comes to the importance of playing in that game.
Tomorrow will be the 24th anniversary of 9/11, and then, as you mentioned, next year, the 25th anniversary, Mets will be playing the Yankees on that September 11th. Speaking of Mets playing the Yankees, they did so 25 years ago in the World Series. Do you still hate Timo Perez?
The hell was he doing?
I've had to forgive Timo. Your therapy, you know, says that you got to let that go. No, I mean, look, was I surprised at the time? Yes. Have I talked about it a lot since? Of course, because it was that pivotal moment in Game One, and I know that was probably when you broke a speaker in your mom's basement.
I was living,
but
man.
Unless you were there. Look, I thought the ball was out off the bat as well. I think the reality is he just thought it was gone and figured he was going to be coasting around the bases, and it surprised everybody. And you know, maybe instant replay shows that it snuck out over the top and came back in. But nevertheless, it just seemed to be one of those defining moments of that 2000 World Series, and another thing to, you know, check on the belt of one Derek Jeter, because he makes the off balance throw perfectly to Posada to get him at the plate. All those things had to align, and so no, I don't hate Timo at all. And by the way, he was very good for us down the stretch and helped us get to that point. So all is forgiven, Timo. Come back and you know. You come out to see
maybe you can pinch run tomorrow for you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, all forgiven from your perspective, not from mine. I still hate him. No.
I don't blame you. No, what's it like in the dugout after somebody makes a mistake of that magnitude on that stage? I mean, does Bobby light him up? Do you light him up? Somebody's got to light him up, no?
I think nobody lights him up. And it was one of those things like it's a 0-0 tie in Game One, right, in the sixth inning of Game
One. Hey, it's Boomer.
And Gio.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
One of a World Series, of a Subway Series. It was a great game. It was, you know, nobody had cracked through at that point. So it was a little bit stunned reaction, more so than an angered reaction. You know, it was stunned like, okay, well, let's get back out there because this game is still ours to win. And we took a lead and had that game still and lost it in the 11th.
Yeah.
And we had a lead in the 9th again. So, look, you can say that was a pivotal moment. I'm on second base. There's two outs. We've got Ventura coming up. There could have been other ways to crack through. But at the end of the day, we still had an opportunity to win it in 9 and wasn't able to close the door.
Real quick, Todd, there's been some shiftings. And by the way, Todd Zeal's with us in studio here, BT and Sound on the Fan. There's been some shiftings here where the Yankees have not won since 09. The Mets are spending money. Mets took Soto. Mets had a nice run last year. So it's changed a little bit. But when you're in the moment, and pro athletes aren't ever conditioned to think that they can't beat another pro, otherwise you wouldn't be a pro.
Right.
You'd be mentally weak and you wouldn't make it. But going into that, the Yankees were still at the apex of their powers, 96, 98, 99, obviously going into 2000. Did you think that you were going to beat them?
Yes, absolutely. I think I told Sal this at one time, and he's like, why? But we as a team, we watched the final playoff game for the Yankees to determine who we were going to. We had already clinched, and we knew we were going to the World Series. And so I personally and a lot of our guys said, let it be the Yankees. We want the Yankees. We think, and we had, you know, back and forth games during that season. The Roger and Mike thing happened, and the split doubleheader at two parks in the same day. I mean, it couldn't have been a more bizarre and interesting baseball year for New York City. So we thought, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to end. The Mets are going to unseat the mighty Yankees in a World Series. Bring them on.
But aside from the symbolism of that, did you actually think that they had weaknesses that you guys would exploit, making you better?
We did.
What about that team did you think was weak?
I don't know that we thought that they had weaknesses.
Or vulnerable.
We just felt like we could beat them. We felt like even in the games we lost to them during the regular season, we felt like we were in those games and should have won those games and could have won those games. And so I think, was it Seattle or whomever?
I think
it was sort of the unknown, and they were, we didn't really know them at all. We knew the Yankees, and we felt collectively like, hey, we can beat these guys, and we wanted the, you know, we wanted it for the city as well. We thought it would be an electric opportunity in New York City, and it was. It just didn't go our way.
It was a good try.
Get the hell out of here with that good try nonsense. BT and Sal, the fam of Todd's the old studio. A couple more for you. Todd, you were a good postseason player in your career. 29 playoff games, 292, 4 homers, 14 ribbies. Did it with the Orioles, Rangers, and the Mets. You think that postseason success is something that can, it's not the flip of the switch, but with this Mets team in particular, like to me, I look at it saying they have some guys that can do damage there. Is there something to that upping their game? And do you believe that this team can do that if they do make it to October?
I look, I've always thought and felt like when you get to those big moments, you want to see who's got that kind of inner, strength to perform in those moments, and not only to perform in those moments, but to want to be the guy in those moments. And I thought, you know, anytime I had an opportunity to play in the playoffs, I'm like, hey, this is the stage that I want to be on. I want to be up with men on base. I want to be the guy up there. And I feel like my game got better. My focus got more keen. The bat felt fast. The pitching felt hittable. And so I loved anything to do with like big games, postseason play. And I think there are some guys on the Mets that feel like they like that stage as well and have shown that they can have success in that moment.
Todd, you came up in 89 and Sal and I were talking before you came. And we, obviously I'm a few years older, so I remember you, I don't know more than Sal, but I obviously remember your career very well. 89 to when you retired to now, all right? The game's changed a ton. Is the game better now in your eyes or when you first entered the game in 89?
You sound like an old guy if you say it was better in my era, but it was different. I think it was different. What I do like, I think the pendulum swung a long way towards analytics and three true outcomes and things that I didn't really buy into as much.
Yeah,
I thought there was certainly a world where analytics was going to help and play a part and give information that was interesting and maybe shape the game differently. I thought it went to such an extreme that I felt like the game became a game that was run by people that had never put on cleats and stepped on the field.
The geeks.
And that felt like, okay, you're eliminating some of the human element, which I think is the most fascinating thing about any sport, including baseball. So I think the pendulum started to come back. I do feel like some of the rule changes that they've made, that I'm a purist, I think have been good for the game. I think stolen bases being included back in the game is something that's good. I think the pitch clock has helped. And I usually get resistance on this, but one of the things that I think for regular season, having the runner on second in extra innings, I think has been a good thing. And why? Because I can remember during this time where I think the pendulum was swinging towards three true outcomes, I did games, and this is a personal event, but I did games where the Mets were on the West Coast. So the game starts at 10. You're in a 1-1 game after 3.5 hours and then go 17 innings of 1-1 with 30 strikeouts in the game. That's literal. I'm talking about 30 strikeouts on the two teams and a 1-1 game into the 16th and 17th inning because everybody walks up every at bat either going to strike out or hit a home run.
Yeah.
And it became such a boring game to me that I'm like, something's got to change. And I feel like that was sort of the moment where the pendulum started to come back. And so I think the guys are better athletes now. I think they're stronger. They're more committed year-round. They are faster and bigger and throw harder. And so I think the game is probably tougher today than it was in my era. But it's relative because these guys grew up with that same level of competition until they got to the big leagues.
For me, it was never about pace of play. It was always about quality of play. So in that game, 1-1 with 30 strikeouts, like that's just bad baseball.
Agreed.
Not to mention that it takes forever. You think the Mets get in the playoffs or no?
I do. I do think they do. I think their back's against the wall. I think they feel like now, at least, I don't know. I'm speculating that, but if I were in that clubhouse, I feel like today is the day that, hey, back's against the wall now. We don't have any padding anymore. San Francisco believes they can overtake us. And, and Cincinnati's not that far behind them. So, hey, it's in our own hands. time for us to take care of our own business.
Would you change your feel if tomorrow you wake up, and obviously you'll be working tonight, but it's 9-3 Phillies. Like, are you placing that much emphasis tonight to kind of shift
this
thing?
I don't necessarily think it's a must win. I don't believe necessarily in must wins unless you're in game six of a series.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's an important game, and I do think that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, the most important games, you know, you never know which ones they're going to be over the course of the year. This is an important game.
One win can change the feel. They win tonight, all of a sudden it's, okay, deep breath. Even if the Giants win a game,
yeah,
just changes the feel.
There's no question. You know, how would you grade Lindor's season, like in totality? Because if we focus on Soto and the pitching and all the Mendoza's moves lately, we haven't talked about Lindor as much, and the Mets aren't hitting a ton. A to Z, Lindor's season 2025. What have you seen?
I feel like Lindor's season has been one that you're going to have to look back on and really analyze at some point, because it's felt like, oh, he's had a great season. He's an all-star for the first time as a Met, and he got off to a really good start, which is unusual for Lindor. And so you figured that lull would have to come. I think the lull took a long time for him to kind of figure out his way out of it, but he had built up such good numbers, it never really looked like his numbers sunk that badly. He's played lesser quality defense this year, and I think he would tell you the same thing than we've seen in the past. Even though he's been spectacular at times, he's missed some routine plays, and he's put a lot of blame on himself for costing some games with his defense. So I think overall he's had, I would say, a decent year, but not a great year for Lindor this year. And I think part of the reason that it's so important that he has a good year is it just seems like when he goes, this team goes.
And that's why I'm asking.
I mean, yeah. And you've got Juan Soto, and Pete Alonso's been spectacular with driving in runs. Brandon Nimmo's had his hot streaks. You've got the young guys that are swinging the bat well. But at the end of the day, when Lindor is hot, this team seems to follow. And that's a lot to put on one guy's shoulders because it's a team game. But when we've seen him warm up, this team seems to follow.
Last one from me. Would you go matchups based, or would you just say Beatty's our third baseman or Vientos is our DH or vice versa? Would you, McNeil in center, McNeil at second? How would you align those guys?
I may differ on opinion on this one, but I like the idea of Jeff McNeil in center, Brett Beatty at second base, Mauricio at third, and Vientos DHing. I've liked that for a while. It may be hard to plug that in because they put Mauricio on the cooler for the last couple of weeks, and he's on the milk carton, and we haven't seen him. But
keep running the bases like you did the other night. You're going
to
stay there.
I mean, I think that was something that was really starting to click at the trade deadline. You got quality play out of all three of those young guys, Beatty, Vientos, and Mauricio. Vientos was just starting to warm up at the trade deadline. They make the trade for Mullins. They've got to play Mullins. That puts Jeff back at second. That puts Beatty at third. That puts Vientos on the bench or at DH. And I thought you saw a lull because of that. Even though once Mark gets hot, this team has gotten hot. But I've been a guy that I thought they had enough pieces at the deadline not to have to go get Mullins or anybody else in center field.
All right, go get those cuts in. We've taken up too much of your time today. You got to get ready for Saturday.
We can't say that in the air. What cuts are you talking about? I'm not doing any training for the game this weekend. I'm just going to go out there raw, Sal. No, I got to do something so I don't blow an Achilles like somebody on the other side of town.
Oh, we appreciate the time. Check it out. Todd's production company going to be working on a film for next year, as he talked about, the 25th anniversary of 9/11. You'll be tomorrow, Engine 3, Ladder 12, as well, with Leiter, Franco, and Bobby V. Thank you for your time, Todd.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Todd. Good stuff, man.
Yep, we'll see you later. Todd, of course, catch him out on the pre- and post-game show for SNY.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.